Hello, everyone, and welcome to freeteleseminars.ca. My name is Dean Jones, and I will be your co-host today along with Susan Sparks. Now, Susan and I meet many business owners in our travels, and one of the things that we like to ask them is this question. If you could have anything for your business, what would it be? And always in the top five things on everyone's wish list is find more customers. And that's why today's topic is so important, since it really addresses some of the key first steps to getting new customers. Today's guest expert is Eric Gilbord. Eric is an author and marketing veteran who, for more than two decades, has worked with businesses to maximize their marketing results. He's also worked on marketing projects for companies like Ford, AT&T, Swiss Chalet, Converse Shoes, Holiday Inn, Ontario Milk Marketing Board, and CBS Records. In 1993, Eric changed his focus to serve small business owners after realizing they were in desperate need of good marketing advice. More recently, he responded to the increasing needs of small and medium-sized businesses for more sophisticated marketing by creating a full-service marketing company called Phase 2 Marketing. Eric's best-selling book is titled Tell Me What to Do, Easy Marketing Tips for Small Business. Speaking today on the Lead Generation Blueprint, 11 Steps to More Business, I'd like to welcome today's guest expert, Eric Gilbord.
Thank you, Dean.
Could you just make sure you speak a little louder, Eric, so we can hear?
Sure.
Great.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
Okay, good. Well, thank you.
Now, Eric, I'd like to start by asking you to share with our listeners a little more about your background and really what led you to develop your 11-step process for getting new customers.
Yeah, no problem. The first half of my career, as you said, was with large ad agencies dealing with large clients. And the second half of my career moved into small and medium-sized business. And during that transition time, I was doing a project for a large company, and we had a rather intricate new business development process worked out. In fact, we designed it on a roll of fax paper because it was a very horizontal kind of a process. And after we'd finished the job, I took a good look at it, and I thought there must be a way to reduce all this down to one piece of paper. And ideally, you know, what happened was we got it down to 11 specific steps so that anyone who's running any size business had the core, blueprint for a new business development program. And the key here is that we wanted it to be a continuous new business development program, because I think that everyone will agree it's one thing to go off and do a campaign and generate some business, and then you end up working on that business, and then you then go back to square one and start all over again generating new business. And nobody wants to do that. You want to have a constant stream of leads and opportunities and prospects, coming through you.
Eric, this is Susan. From our earlier discussions, I know that you were talking about a step-by-step system that businesses of any size can follow. I've
right.
grown several businesses over my life, and one thing I've learned is that there's no shortcut. Yeah, it struck me that you said there are three keys to success. Can you tell us what they are?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for asking. The first one is that you must do every single step, and there's only 11 steps, but you have to do all 11 steps. If you're missing pieces, like any puzzle, then you're not really seeing the whole picture, and you're not doing the job. The second important key is that you must do this consistently. It's not going to do you as much good to do it in bits and pieces, as I said a couple of minutes ago. You really need to do this on an ongoing basis, and you need to do everything consistently. And the third one is that, you know, the purpose of this new business development blueprint, this 11-step process, is not to generate work for you or create, you know, more responsibility. The whole idea and what I encourage everyone to do in terms of implementation of the program is that it's absolutely necessary to bring someone and get them involved in the process. And as we go through it, you'll start to see that once it's set up, it's not that complicated, and it doesn't really require a huge amount of expertise. What it requires is someone who genuinely enjoys the marketing process and absolutely genuinely wants to be involved in helping you build your business. So depending on the size of the company, it could be someone inside who's not necessarily working at 100% capacity. It could be someone within your family or someone, you know, who's a family friend or someone who wants to be involved with you growing your business. And this becomes a very, very important element. And if you can get them involved, and really what will happen is that they will do most of the legwork, and what will happen is that you will end up getting the leads, and then you take those leads and you move them forward, ideally into a scenario where you've created some additional business for yourself. But, you know, to go over the three again, it's do every step, it's do them consistently, and it's have someone work with you, have someone help you going through all these steps on an ongoing basis.
Don't do it all yourself. What great advice.
No, you'll frustrate yourself, and you'll end up saying that, well, it's a great idea, but. And that's the biggest killer in moving your business forward. So recognize right up front that, you know, this is not a standalone, I have to do all this myself thing. This is definitely you want to have some help.
That's certainly true. I've been in that trap many times.
A lot of people get into that.
That's right. It seems to be the normal default. Your labor is free, and everyone else's costs you cash, which is always the way.
Well, the question you have to ask yourself, is it worth $10 an hour, you know, or $15 an hour to have somebody help you if you can have a $5,000 order or a $10,000 order or a $100,000 order?
True. Eric, when we start a business, I know having started many in my life, a lot of us start with a dream, and then we try and take that dream and create a business by, in our innocence, breaking it down into manageable pieces and time frames. But with your process, I'm sure there's a little more structure with goal setting. Would you like to give us some info there?
Absolutely. There's an old expression, if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. And, you know, the first thing that I like to encourage people is to set a realistic goal of what they want to achieve for the next year. And it might be that if you've just left, you know, a job and you're starting a business, and you might say to yourself, well, if I can equal my income from the previous year, then that's a great goal. If you're working on and growing an existing business, then you might say to yourself, well, 10% growth might be a reasonable thing, or 20 or 50 or even 100% growth, depending on the industry and depending on you know, how experienced you are at doing that. But the key with the goal setting is that you could sit there and you could say to yourself, well, I want $1 million next year. And you have to ask yourself a couple of questions. And in order to do $1 million in business, is that 10 $100,000 orders? And is that reasonable? Is it $1 million $1 orders? You know, and you have to ask those questions, because you need to come to the realization as to whether you can, in fact, man, you know, that kind of an opportunity. Do you have the resources to do something like that? Do you have the marketing promotional dollars to do it? Do you have the infrastructure to actually make something like that happen? So you might say to yourself, well, you know what, $250,000 is a reasonable figure in terms of my goal setting, and I believe that I can achieve that in these ways, and I believe that, you know, getting X amount of orders is a reasonable figure based on my history, based on, you know, what we've been doing, you know, the last little while, based on what my competitors are doing. So goal setting is absolutely number one.
In the second step of your process, you talk about the concept of a prospect list. Could you tell us more about that, Eric?
Yes. You know, it's one thing to set a goal. Now you've got to figure out where is that business going to come from. And assuming that you've focused on who your audience is, you've identified, you know, the target group that you want to go after, you know, the next best thing is to pull together some kind of a database, some kind of a list, and it doesn't matter if it's 10 or 110 or 1,010, you need to pull together a list of prospects that you want to go after, and you need to gather as much information as you can about those prospects so that you're prepared when you communicate with them, and you need to, you know, communicate with them on an ongoing basis. And there's lots of places where you can get prospect lists. You can, you know, you can meet somebody on a plane and they can hand you a card. You can go to networking functions. You can, you know, buy lists from a list broker or an association or from magazines. You can, you know, go to a chamber of commerce. There's lots of different places. You can do a cross promotion, for example, with another company who has a list of a a similar kind of an audience. Lots of different places where you can go to get the list that you need. But what you will have to do is you'll have to qualify that list before you start spending marketing dollars.
Can you explain what you mean by qualifying the list?
Absolutely. There's no matter where you get a list or you acquire a prospect name, I will absolutely guarantee you that much of that information will potentially be inaccurate. It doesn't matter if you got a business card from the president of a company while you were sitting beside them on a plane on holiday, or you got it from a purchased list broker. It's necessary to qualify, and you've got to qualify on two levels. You've got to qualify that you've got the correct contact information. So you want to make sure that you've got name, address, phone number, email, the basic communication tools so that you can communicate with people in many different ways. And at the same time, once you do that, you've got to absolutely make sure that this is the right person. There's nothing worse than being in a scenario where you need to be sending something to an HR person, a human resource person, and you're in fact sending it to a contact person who's in the shipping department. I mean, that's not going to help you with your marketing efforts. So the two aspects of qualifying a prospect call are very simply making sure that you've got correct contact information and making sure that you have the right contact person. And what I recommend is that when you call and you ask for the contact information, you make it clear that you are not in selling mode. You are not trying to sell anything over the phone. You're merely just getting correct contact information. That's it. And then it's okay to call back once you've achieved the correct contact information. Now, you may go and get through to the receptionist or someone's assistant, and they may say to you, okay, this is the correct information. But at that point, you still don't know whether that, in fact, is the right contact person for you. So it's all right to call back, take a minute or two on the phone, explain who you are, and speak to that contact person and ask them if they are the correct person for you to send your communication materials to. And they may say that they have an assistant, or they may say they have somebody above them, or they may say, yeah, thank you, send it to me and I'll look forward to it. And it can be any one of many different answers to the question. But you, again, are not in the selling mode, and I really want to emphasize that. What will happen if you get into a selling mode and the person has not really been, warmed up and they really don't know much about you, is they will ask you a question in all likelihood, and the answer to the question they might say, do you have green frames? And you might say, we only have brown frames. And they just turn around and say, well, we're not interested then. And it throws everything off on a horrible curve, and it doesn't give you the opportunity to follow through with the rest of the process that we're going to talk about in a couple of minutes. So really do not get into a sales mode with anyone. And that was step three.
Great. Dean, would you like to do step four?
Okay, that was for the qualifying prospect call. Step four now is the databases. Now, I think, Eric, most people have heard of databases or maybe even used one, but can you tell us the benefits of using a database as part of the system?
For sure. The reality is when I do a presentation in front of a live group, I ask everyone to put their hand up if they have their prospect information in a shoebox, and typically half the hands go up in the room. We've all had business cards in envelopes and boxes and post-it notes and all kinds of places. And by putting it into a database, by putting it into a customer relationship management package of some sort, it has the opportunity to make you 10 or 100 times more effective in your marketing efforts. And the database allows you to retain really key information. I mean, I've gone back to my database that I've been collecting for many, many years and contacted people that I haven't talked to in 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 years because I had a very, very quick, easy access to that information. And, what we want to do is we want to make sure that we have good, solid information so we can get to the people that we want to get to. We also, in terms of new business development, we want to make sure that we have a place to put the information of what has transpired in terms of our going after this new business. You know, have we called? Have we written? Have we sent emails? Have we had meetings? And where are the notes for all these different steps in terms of the process? Because you don't, unfortunately, you can't just make a call, make a sale, and fulfill the sale and move on. There's always lots of mini steps in between. And if you can keep track of those things and you know that, you know, you spoke to them 3 weeks ago and they told you that in 3 weeks is a good time to follow up, it's important to do that. It's absolutely necessary to do that.
I'd like to ask you a question, Eric. What kind of software do you use for your database? I know there's dozens, if not hundreds, available.
Well, there are many, and in fact, what I'm using right now is something called Vidian Profit, and it's a relatively inexpensive package that works within Outlook, and essentially what it does is it gives you a customer relationship management package that takes advantage of everything that goes on in Outlook. It's not the most sophisticated CRM in the world by any means, but what it does do is it allows you to hold all the pieces of information, all the contact items that you have for that opportunity in one place. It also allows you to do things that some other CRMs do as well, and that's like, you know, when you come back from a meeting and you want to send a thank you note to somebody, most people, you know, don't do it because it seems to be a lot of work or they think they have to sit down and create a brand new letter. You can create a template letter, and if you do this right, you go in, you've had your meeting, you pull up the template, you either keep it the way it is or you make a minor adjustment, you hit the button, and it comes out of the printer or it goes off in an email as a PDF, and it's just a very, very easy way of doing a follow-up. Now, when you're doing a mailing and you want to send out 100 or 500 or 1,000 pieces and you want to put, for example, you want to put a customized letter with it or you just want to put a label on it or something, all these things can be done, you know, fairly quickly and efficiently by utilizing something like a customer relationship management package. So it's tracking information, it's staying in touch with people, it's reminding you of things that you have to do. These are all very, very important elements in generating new business.
Interesting. And this is something that you manage yourself?
It's not very difficult. Yeah, it's like I said, it's really some clicks of the mouse, and you attach, you know, letters and emails and whatnot to it, and then it's all there. You go to the opportunity, and you may have 10 different opportunities within one customer. You go to the opportunity, and it tells you immediately everything that's happened as it pertains to that particular opportunity, the people that are involved, the contact information, everything that you've sent out, it's all there. So there's no hunting around, and there's no, not knowing what's going on.
What was the name of that package again, Eric?
Avidian Profit.
Could you spell that?
A-V-I-D-I-A-N. I think if you just look up avidian.com. It's relatively inexpensive. They have some more robust versions of it for a small sales force. I mean, it's not a Salesforce.com. It's not a gold mine. It's probably closer to an ACT, but ACT is probably a little more sophisticated. And then there's lots of other ones out there. I just found it to be something that was, you know, relatively easy to manage and a fairly reasonable price range. I think $150, something like that.
I think our audience can tell what interest we have in your database. I've lost mine 3 times over the years. When I hired somebody to look after it, it was always up to date, but trying to do it myself is one of those things I should have delegated.
Well,
what,
you know,
about
–
sorry?
Sorry, go ahead.
Moving on to step 5, lead generation packages. I'd really like to hear what you have to say about that. And I'd also wondering if this is a point for you to bring in about cold calling, or am I ahead of you, or does it fit?
You're absolutely in the right place at the right time.
All right.
I'm not a big fan of cold calling. I have had some success with it, but I am not a big fan of cold calling. I think that, you know, you get someone, on the phone, you get them, you don't know, you know, exactly what they're doing, what's on their mind. They don't know a lot about you. You have to be really, really good on the phone, and you have to have a pretty tight story to tell very, very quickly in order to be successful with a cold call. And again, it depends on the industry. It depends on what it is that you're selling. But what I find is that if you use a lead generation package to warm someone up, then it's a whole other conversation. And in fact, if you've created a lead generation package, and let's say for argument's sake that you've just made a decision to, because of the timing, you wanted to do a cold call. You could do the cold call, and what you could say to somebody is, I can send something to you instantly. You'll have it in, 10 or 15 seconds, and then we can have a conversation, based on this marketing material. Then that's better than doing just a flat cold call. But what I think that the lead generation package, its purpose is not to sell. Its purpose is to whet someone's appetite, to let them know who you are, what you do, and why you're perhaps different from a competitor. But it is what we're talking about. It's something to warm something up, to give somebody a little bit of background information on you. And it could be a postcard, could be a series of postcards, could be a letter, could be a simple flyer. But what you don't want to do is you don't want to give away the whole show. I think what you want to do is you want to give them just a small bit of information, because at the end of the day, you're looking to get into a face-to-face situation. And again, it depends on the product or service that you're offering, but ideally, you want to have that face-to-face opportunity with someone and to begin to develop a real relationship with them. So what I would suggest is that you do things that are personalized. You make sure that you've got the person's correct name, title, et cetera. I mean, I don't know about you, but when I get correspondence from someone and there's misinformation, then I begin to question the caliber of service or product that these folks can offer. So I'd like to think that the information is all accurate. I find that a personalized document is clearly more productive than an impersonal, dear resident or dear, marketing manager, something like that. You want people, want to know that you put out a little bit of effort to find out a little bit about them, and I think that's very important. I encourage people to be creative, to be different, to do something that's a little bit unexpected, to stand out from the crowd. I find that, people will send sort of template types of postcards that all kind of look the same, or they'll send letters in a plain envelope, and there's that, that ongoing argument about, do you put a handwritten, address on an envelope versus a computer generated, and there's lots of research that argues both ways. I think you just have to try things and try doing things a little bit differently. I find that utilizing the space, if you are going to go with the envelope idea or package idea, not that you necessarily have to fill every inch of the space, but if there was a thought-provoking kind of a sentence that was, on the outside of the envelope, something that really made somebody want to open it, these are things that one has to think about. And the key here is trial and error. You really have to go out and create two or three or four or five different packages. Try them in small quantities. No one says that you have to create something and send out 1,000 or 5,000 or 10,000 pieces just to find out whether it works. I'm a big, big believer in researching something. And so send out some small quantities, something that's, statistically relevant, maybe it's 50 or 100 pieces, and find out, whether one pulls stronger than the other one. And you may think that, well, lots of big companies can do that kind of testing. You can do it equally. Anyone can do that. It's not that difficult to do. And then the next thing is the lead generation follow-up call.
Before we get into that, Eric, can I do a summary? Because there's quite
a
bit that we have to recap here. We started with Eric's three keys to success. He said that you have to see the whole puzzle and do every step of the process, and you have to do everything consistently on a regular basis. And it's typically necessary to bring in people who either want to do the marketing or who know how to do the marketing and can help you. Now, in terms of the 11-step process, step one was goal setting. And he said set a realistic goal for the first year. And he used different criteria you could use depending on your situation. Step two was the prospect list. He says now once you have a set a goal, you have to decide how you're going to get there And more specifically, who are you going to talk to and then to learn more about them? Who are your targets that you're wanting to sell to? Next step is to create a list of names, and these can be through connections or through list brokers, cross promotions with other businesses, and even associations. Now, also in step three, which was qualifying prospects, you must qualify the list on two levels. Number one, you have to make sure you've got the right name and contact information, because that's a bad foot to get off on if you don't have their name properly. And then also, is this the right person in the company to talk to for that particular part of the business? Next, you had to, when contacting them, initially just call and confirm that you've got the right information and make sure that you're not trying to sell them anything. This is not the time to sell yet. And if that's actually the person, just confirm that, do I send any information to you or is there someone else that looks after that for you? And step four was databases, and the databases give you quick and easy access to all your information, and they also give you a place for all your notes that you can keep track of all the mini steps you have to do during the process of selling and prospecting. And Eric said there are different software packages that can do this function, and he uses Avidian, and it depends on your needs. If it's a big organization, you might need something different, but he said that does the trick. Step five is lead generation packages. And these are basically used for warming up your prospects. And if you want to use them for cold calls, that's something you could use them for as well. But the purpose is not to sell. But it's really to warm them up, and you don't want to tell them the whole story. And I know Eric's going to touch on that very soon in the next few steps. And he said try some different approaches. You don't know really what's going to work. You might have an idea, but try different tests and do it in small quantities. And he recommended 50 to 100 or maybe a little more. Just to see which works better for you. Now, we're going to go on to the next step, Eric, in the system, which is the lead generation follow-up call.
Right. Yes, and, you know, everything that you've done prior to this is great. However, if you don't follow up, then your chances for success are significantly reduced. It's really, really important. And again, if you have the system in place and you can send out 1,000 lead generation pieces and follow up in a timely manner, and a timely manner is a few days. It's, you know, give it a couple of days to get into the system, you know, for somebody to receive it, and then, you know, follow up in a couple of days. If you don't, send out 10, send out 20, send out 100. You know, you don't have to send out everything at one time, because the key here is that you want to establish a connection. You want to begin a relationship that ideally will become a long-term relationship. So I think it's very, very important that you get on the phone and you understand, you know, what the purpose is of what you're trying to do. And what you want to do is you want to get to a point where, again, they have a little bit more information about you, and they're curious and interested in perhaps bringing you in and having a conversation. And getting to know you a little bit better, and if your timing is good, then there may be an opportunity on the table. So very, very important to do the follow-up call. If you sit back and wait for the phone to ring, you may be sitting back a long time, and it may not ring.
And, Eric, what's your advice to people who are terrified to pick up the telephone?
Practice. Actually, practice. Seriously, I mean, any time that I do a campaign, you don't necessarily step out of the gate being an expert. So let's say that you're trying something new. What I will do is I'll jot out a script. I'll make calls, but I'll make calls to the smallest opportunities, not the largest, and I will practice. And while I'm having that conversation, and, you know, I go in with an opening line and the person doesn't get it or doesn't understand it or it's too vague, then I'll go back and I'll try something else until I've worked out, after three or four or five or six calls, I've worked out a short script, a guideline for what I want to do. You don't really want to get on the phone and read like a robot, you know, read a script, but, you know, you want to give yourself the opportunity to have a bit of a guideline, and you'll need to test things out. But, again, you test it out with the smallest opportunities. You never test it out with a large opportunity. And it's practice. It really is. I think that you'll find that the more you do it, the more comfortable you'll be. And if you're absolutely uncomfortable with it, hire somebody who is comfortable. Because that's an awful lot of work to do to get up to this point and then to not have it move forward for you.
Yeah.
So practice or find somebody to do it for you.
Really good advice. I've done a lot of cold calling.
There are people that love to be on the phone.
Yes. Well, I'll share something with you, because every time I tell people I do this, they say, you do? When I have done a lot of cold calling over the time, what I do is I take my script and I print it, I type it, and I do it in big, bold letters so that it's easy to read, and then I highlight where I want my emphasis to be, and that's how I start working it. So
and eventually, after a while, it becomes second nature. You don't really need the script. You find that you can maybe just use it at a glance, but for the most part, you know, it becomes second nature, and you're pretty comfortable doing it.
Exactly.
And that's where it really becomes fun, because there's that wonderful sense of accomplishment,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of a side benefit.
Yeah.
Now here's a mistake some people make, though, in the early parts. If they've got a script, they focus more on reading the script than listening to the prospect.
Oh, yeah, that's the worst thing in the world.
You
want to move away from that as quickly as possible, because there's nothing worse than – you sound like a telemarketer. Regardless of what it is that you're offering, you sound like the worst of the stereotype of the telemarketer. And you could be offering a high-end consulting service, but you'll come across like somebody who's offering something on the low end.
Thank you. So let's move on to step seven, where there are obviously two possible outcomes from your follow-up calls. Do you want to expand on that?
Sure. There's what we call 7A and 7B. And 7A is they're perhaps interested, and there may possibly be an immediate need. And that's wonderful. You know, you've come at the right time, at the right place, and it might be a few weeks ahead or a few months, but you've come at a good time, and you know, you've called a good time, and they want to arrange a first meeting or a presentation, and I think that's a wonderful opportunity for you. The second part, 7B, is that there's no need, and it may be that it's just the timing isn't you know quite right, or maybe they've made a decision to move with somebody else on something similar recently, but you know, what this does is it gives you this wonderful opportunity that while you may have missed, you know, a particular opportunity, and let's say that the next one comes, you know, 12 months later, what this does is it gives you 12 months to establish a relationship. It gives you 12 months to get to know these people, to send them additional information, to track what's happening with the opportunity. It gives you a chance to send out, you know, perhaps a newsletter, or make occasional calls, or, you know, to be a resource in case something goes wrong with the other people that they hired. They can turn around and they can say to themselves, well, gee, maybe we should give these people a chance. And I've been in that situation. I have had that opportunity happen where a company went with a large competitor, and, you know, they were working on it, and a smaller project came up, and frankly, the company decided to give us a call, because they'd already, you know, put enough onto the shoulders of the supplier they chose, and it gave us a foot in the door. It gave us an opportunity to prove ourselves in a small way, and that grew into larger and larger opportunities. So, you know, there's no such thing as a no. There's just a great opportunity to develop and establish a better relationship with the people that you're going after.
I like that. I like to say no means just not now.
Exactly.
When you're dealing with these people, do you ask permission to add them to your database to do follow-up?
Oh, sure. Yeah, do you mind if I call you in a month or two? And you know, it's interesting. People, you know, go on maternity leave, or at least some of the people go on maternity leave, and, you know, others, you know, get hired or fired, or, you know, they move up or they move sideways, and there's always lots and lots of change. But if you're following the opportunity, you know, and you've got the okay to call someone back, you may find that you call someone and they say, well, geez, you know, I know we spoke a couple of months ago, but I've moved in within the company, and I'll arrange for you to talk to so-and-so. And you know, the beauty of that is that when somebody comes into a new position, they're typically looking for the opportunity to bring their own suppliers in. So, you know, that could work out in your favor as well.
Good advice. Thank you.
Now, that takes us to step 8. Is that correct, Eric?
Yep.
Okay, so let's assume that the person is interested, that you've been contacting back in step 7. So now we want to put together what's called a meeting presentation package. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. And this is the interesting part. This is where, you know, for those of you in the audience who don't have a huge amount of experience doing this, this is typically where you panic and you freak out and you say, oh, my God, they want to talk to us. And, you know, I can give you a few pieces of advice. And the first piece of advice I have for a initial meeting with somebody, a face-to-face meeting, it's a very simple rule. It's 80% listening and 20% talking. You go in, and what I typically do is I will go in and talk to somebody, and I will say, how can I help you get what you want? And typically they'll spend the next hour telling me what to present to them. Because up until that point, I have no idea, you know, necessarily what I should be presenting. I have a lot of different services that I can offer, but if I allow them to speak and if I listen and take notes, and here's another little tip. I don't know if everyone in the audience takes notes or not, but what I have discovered is that the minute you start to write notes of your meeting, people take you very, very seriously. And inevitably, they will ask for a copy of the notes, or what I do often is that I'll take the notes, I'll clean them up and organize them, particularly with larger opportunities, and send them off as kind of a minutes of the meeting type of a document to facilitate, you know, sort of the next conversation. But taking notes is very, very keen, and people will just talk. I mean, they will spend the next half an hour, 45 minutes, whatever it is. The reason that they've allowed you to come in and to do a presentation is because they have some kind of a need. And if they have a need, they have a need to get that off their chest and to communicate that to you. Oftentimes people, you know, on the other side will come in and start selling and not giving that person an opportunity to tell you what it is they're actually looking for. So 80% listening, 20% talking is absolutely paramount to your success in that first meeting. And you want to give, you know, some additional information. You want to give an overview of who you are. You don't want to go, you know, and give them, again, everything. You want to just give more information, because if you are to do a proposal or, you know, of some sort, then that may be the proper place for some additional information. You don't necessarily want to inundate them with, you know, 27 different products and 27 different brochures. You want to pick the ones that are, you know, the most appropriate for this particular given opportunity. And it may be that you have other things that you can do for other opportunities within that organization, but I think you need to keep focused, because too much information can make somebody crazy, and they just, you know, at that point really don't know what to do with you, and sometimes they'll just not do anything with you.
There's a saying, Eric, in the world that people like to, or don't like to be sold, but they like to buy.
Oh,
that fits your 80-20 rule.
And that's what we do. I mean, you know, we educate, and then, you know, our marketing services are bought and not sold. And so I think that's probably the best salesperson, the person who doesn't sell at all. So that's what I would do from the standpoint of the meeting presentation package.
Eric, would you say that presentation, when you do it in person, is almost like an interview of each of you? Or would that have happened?
I look at it as an interview. Yeah, I do. I want to find out what they're looking for. I want to give them a little more information on me. But, yeah, it's basically an interview. And, you know, you're kind of interviewing them. You know, they're not necessarily interviewing you. You're interviewing them because you want to understand what the opportunity is. I mean, too many people have gone in selling something, you know, that's black, and the person was buying something white. And they just really have no use for what you have. And it doesn't mean that you didn't have what they needed. It's just they weren't given the opportunity to be aware that you had it.
Have you ever had the opportunity or the situation where you've gotten this far and decided the account wouldn't be for you because of a philosophical alignment or something?
That can happen. I mean, it hasn't happened too often. That can happen. I'll tell you what else happens is that, and I learned this a long time ago, and this is where the whole qualifying, you know, kind of over the phone is kind of an appropriate thing as well, is that you go out to a meeting and you spend lots of time with somebody, and then you discover that they're not the decision maker, that there is no budget, and you know, there probably is no opportunity. And, you know, how many of us have found ourselves in that position where you walk out of a meeting with somebody only to realize that there was no point in even coming out? Because
Yikes.
There just wasn't anything there.
Wow.
Well, I've had that happen. I've gotten in the car and driven from Young and Shepherd to Ajax and had a long meeting with somebody and then drove all the way back and realized that that was a complete waste of time. And that was at a point where, you know, I would go out and do a lot of talking and think, wow, it was a great meeting. All these great ideas were, you know, were moving around the room. And that's when I learned that, you know, if you fill people with too much information, you know, they'll either go someplace else or they won't do anything. So that was the point where I realized that it's a 90-minute, in my industry anyway, for what I do, it's 90 minutes, and the first 75 or 80 minutes are the other person talking. And the question is, how can I help you get what you want? And then I just shut my mouth. I've also found, and I don't know if anyone else has, that sometimes when someone is talking to you and telling you this, what they want to communicate to you, you know, you have to resist the urge to chime in there, because I actually, you know, found myself in situations where somebody said, will you let me finish? Now, this is the person that you're hoping to do business with. So you don't want to interrupt people. You want to allow them all the time they need to communicate.
So then, assuming that things are aligned and you are invited to go further, that gives you the opportunity then to do your proposal, which is
right.
Step 9.
Right, and the proposal is kind of an interesting situation. You know, it's interesting with proposals. Some people want a 1 or 2 page executive summary and that's it. Some people want a 100-page detailed proposal. I'm going to give everyone in the audience something that, you know, that they need and deserve and should have had a long time ago, and that's permission to ask the person what kind of proposal they're looking for. Because at the end of the day, it's fair to say to somebody, you know, what are your expectations? What you don't want to do is give somebody who wants a 2-page, you know, executive summary kind of proposal, a 100-page proposal. What you don't want is to give somebody who wants a full detailed proposal a 2-page executive summary. There's nothing wrong with asking typically what kind of proposals you get, what are your expectations, what are you looking for. It's okay to do that. I have worked with companies, you know, large successful companies who have thrown a 100-page proposal on the table in front of me, and I've looked at the president of the company and said, does anybody read that? And he goes, I don't think so. And it's like, well, why are you doing that? And, well, you know, we need to put this information in, that information in. And I get that because different people read different sections of it. But this 100-page document didn't have a simple 2-page executive summary.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very important that you become very clear with people as to what their expectations are.
So the proposal has been submitted now, and that brings us to step 10, Eric, where, once again, there's two possible outcomes. Is that correct?
Right. You have your first job, or there's no immediate need, and we can take the no immediate need. It's just similar to 7, you know, where you want to track them, you want to send them newsletters, you know, circumstances change. You know, your job is to get on the prospect shopping list, and preferably at the top of the list. That's what your purpose is in communicating with them and staying in touch. You want to eventually be on their shopping list. And I can tell you that most people have a very short shopping list. In my business of marketing services, for the most part of 300 companies that I've dealt with in the last 14 years or 300 companies that I've actually done work with, or there are obviously others, you know, for the most part, they may have talked to one, maybe two other companies, but for the most part, not. People are looking for somebody who can help them satisfy a need, you know, itch a scratch, and they're looking for a solution. And if you can get on that shopping list, you have a pretty good chance of being successful. So, you know, the other option is that you get that first job and you have your opportunity to, you know, to prove yourself. And you want to make absolutely certain that you do everything right, and you want to make sure that you follow up with that customer to to make sure that they've gotten you know what they wanted and they got it in a timely manner. And what I found in you know at least in my business and working with lots of other companies is that for the most part, people want you to do what you say you're going to do when you say you're going to do it for the price that you said you're going to do it for. And that's all. And that's really what it takes to make somebody satisfied and to earn the opportunity for you know other jobs from them. They're really just looking for you to do what you say you're going to do and clean up after and, you know, and leave it at that.
So then that enables you to have a satisfied customer. And it, I guess that builds then the foundation for an ongoing relationship.
Right, absolutely. And that's really what you're looking for is you want, you know, ideally an ongoing relationship because, you know, we all know that it takes a significantly less amount of work to gain other opportunities from an existing customer as it does for going after a new customer. So what you want is you want to maintain a great working relationship with someone so that those next 5 or 10 or 100 jobs can do well for you. I had an experience a number of years ago with Lottery Corporation, and you know what started with a $25,000 job ended up being $1.5 million in business over the next 18 months.
Pretty nice.
In fact, it actually started with we're not using any other outside agencies, but I went and had a meeting anyway, and because we were doing things that were a little bit unusual, a little bit different than our competitors, we had this one $25,000 opportunity, and like I said, $1.5 million later, it was a pretty enjoyable relationship.
So that brings us to the end of the 11 steps. Is that correct, Eric?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, that's great. Well, it's definitely a lot easier when you have the path to follow, I think, to
right.
Start building the prospects and the eventual customers. Now, Eric, before we go, can you tell our listeners about some of the resources you have to offer and maybe how people could get, the different ways they can get in touch with you?
Sure. They can get in touch with us via our office number, 416-686-2466. They can go to my blog, and there's lots of information on the blog, you know, marketing information and events and all kinds of things. And that's Eric Gilbord. It's ericgilbord.blogspot.com. And there's links on there as well. We also have an implementation program that works with small groups to take these 11 steps and actually get them going within your company. And you can contact us and we can tell you about that, or you can go to ericgilbord.blogspot.com and you can look at some of the information on that and we can have a chat about it and we'll put some groups together. But at the end of the day, you know, this is all great information. If you don't do something with it, if you don't implement the program, then it's been a nice conversation, and that's it. And I'd like everyone to think about the importance of actually getting something like this going and getting it going quickly and getting it going, you know, correctly right from the beginning. So, you know, I'd be happy to talk to folks about that or, you know, or private consulting for your company. You don't necessarily have to do it through a group implementation. We do this with lots of companies.
Okay, that's great. Thank you, Eric. And this is now what we do typically at the end of every session. We'd like to ask our guest expert for 3 expert actions. And basically, these are what are the 3 actions you'd like to see people listening today to do, to take action with today?
Well, I guess the first one is to seriously consider implementing the program. And you know, that involves, you know, as I said, finding someone to work with you, but, you know, but to really seriously consider implementing the program. Secondly, to be very clear and focused on who it is that you expect to derive your new business from and learning as much as you can about those individuals and being, you know, unfortunately, you know, your potential customer isn't everyone. You know, no matter what the product is, there are some companies or some industries or some individuals who have a greater opportunity for you, and they all have certain common elements, and you really have to focus in. And I'm a big believer in focus and in quality. So it's very, very key that you continue to, drill down and zero in on who it is that you want to work with. If you have an existing company, you probably have, a customer list. And the truth of the matter is that if you pull out your accounting records for the last 12 months, 20% of your customers did 80% of your business. Now, you look at those 20%, and those are the people that you need to focus on. You need to find more people like those 20%ers. And it's okay, this is kind of the third thing, it's okay to let the bottom customers go. If you create a vacuum, if you allow some room for new customers to come in and you set your sights on a larger, more focused kind of a customer and you allow the smaller ones to drop off, then you've created, a vacuum in a situation where you will attract those bigger, better customers and gradually move your business forward and move it up and move it up. And was that two or three?
That's three. That's great.
Oh, good.
That would be three. I have them written down.
Okay.
We teach it, but I have it written down.
I can go on.
Now, Eric, you shared something with me on Saturday that I would love you to share with people on the line
sure.
that I think is fun. Would you like to do that?
Sure. What is it you're referring to?
The Hat Project.
Sorry?
The Mad Hatter Project.
Oh, the Mad Hatter. Absolutely. Thank you. Yes. well, we talked about a lot of different things. We've created something called Mad Hatter Speed Networking, which we're having a huge amount of success with. And it's a separate company from Phase 2 Marketing, but I am the Mad Hatter. And the purpose of Mad Hatter Speed Networking is that over the years, what I've realized is that networking, at least within the GTA and some other markets in Canada, and I've done some in the U.S. as well, has not really changed in the last 10 or 15 years. I mean, typically people go to an event and, there may be a crowd of people, 10, 20, 50, 100 people, and you walk around with your business cards, maybe you have a half a dozen conversations, and maybe you give out some cards, and maybe somebody gives you their card, and you don't really know what to do with their card, and they don't really know what to do with your card. And to me, it becomes a big waste of time. So we have created something called Mad Hatter Speed Networking, and you can go to madhattersn.com, or madhatterspeednetworking.blogspot.com for a fuller explanation. But basically what we've done is we've created a situation where in groups of 50 to 60 at a time, and there can be two or three groups in an evening, but a group of 50 to 60 at a time, you will have the opportunity to talk to all 60 people, in small groups. And what we encourage people to do is this is not about I'm Eric, the marketing consultant, and I need clients. That's not what we're asking. What we're suggesting is that people drill down and get focused. And so there's a bit of a continuous theme here. It's get focused and determine what one thing you require to move your business forward. What one thing do you need to move that project forward? And we will facilitate the opportunity. And basically the way it works is that you're in a small group of six, so there's you and five other people in a circle of chairs. And at a given time, one person from each group gets up and moves to the next group, and you eventually move your way around the room. But what you do is you stand in front of these five people or sit, and in 30 seconds or less, this is who I am, this is what I do, and this is what I'm looking for. And then through our system, those folks will feed back to you whether they can help you or not help you. And I'll give you a couple of quick examples of how people are using this. We had a lady from the Boys and Girls Club, and no business experience, no networking experience, and didn't really know what to do, and came in one evening and said, here's where I'm at, what do I do? And I said, well, what's happening there? And she said, well, we have three golf tournaments coming up over the summer. And I said, well, why don't you go around the room and explain who you are and ask for golfers? And she did that, and at the end of the exercise, she was all excited, and she came up and said that not only did she get golfers for the tournament, but she also got people offering to promote the tournaments for free and people donating prizes for all the tournaments. Not a bad, you know, use of a couple of hours of her time. It was terrific. We've had other people who had, someone had an eco product and wanted to meet someone who could introduce them to David Suzuki. We've had people who are, you know, looking for, you know, some marketing help, looking for a designer who had fashion experience, or, you know, an insurance agent who was looking only for tradespeople. So if anyone that he was, you know, in these groups around the room who knew tradespeople, you know, electrician, plumber, what have you, that's specific and that's all that that person was looking for. And it becomes a very, very powerful method for getting the resources that you need to move your business forward. And we provide some instruction at the beginning of the evening. And it tends to be quite loud and boisterous and fun, and as everybody's running around the room and, you know, and in an organized fashion. And, you know, at the end of the exercise, we've had, you know, many, many responses from, you know, a gentleman who considers himself a basically a full-time, you know, networking individual, and said at the end of it he thought he knew all about, you know, networking, and said that he just had no idea that there was so much more that could be accomplished in these kinds of environments. And so we get a lot of, you know, that kind of response from folks that have perhaps not had the best experience in a networking environment, but have walked away with huge, you know, contacts and really good, solid information from our events.
Thank you for that. You have me smiling. I've done that many times, and it is fun. It's putting fun into business, which a lot of us forget.
Well,
Eric,
we're also taking it. We're taking Mad Hatter nationally. So if anyone's interested in being involved with the Mad Hatter, perhaps as a franchisee, you know, they should give us a call.
Is that the same phone number then, Eric?
Sure. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, Eric, I would like to say thank you so much for being our guest today.
My pleasure.
And I hope that you'll be available after we go off the recording line to do some question and answer for those people who want
Absolutely.
To stay on the line. That's
be
perfect.
My pleasure.
All right. So just a reminder that the replay will be available on our website, freeteleseminars.ca. You can look for it in about 24 hours. It will be an MP3 file. Watch for your email with details. And thank you all so much for joining us today, and we look forward to having you with us next month. Thank you.
Thank you.